Welcome back, everyone, to the Equally Well UK podcast. It's Andre here from Mental Health, and I'm here today with Sam Allen, Chief Executive of Sussex Partnership Trust. Thank you very much for joining me, Sam. I'm really good to get you on the podcast today. I thought I'd start off by asking you, you know, what you're doing locally in your trust to ensure that people living with mental illness get the physical health care needs met.
Thanks, Andre. Sussex Partnership, so we provide services across Sussex and also some services in Hampshire. And I suppose we're probably not doing anything that different from other NHS mental health trusts out there, which is we're doing our absolute utmost to ensure that all of the people who receive services from us with a severe and enduring mental illness have a regular physical health care check. And we've trained, in fact, a lot of our staff and given them the equipment in order to do those checks, which is probably easier said than done, really. That's been quite a sort of a cultural shift for us, which means that we've had to adapt our training programmes, our support and supervision for our staff who are undertaking those physical healthcare checks. But really trying to make sure that every contact is an opportunity, really, to have a conversation about not just somebody's mental health, but about their physical health care as well, particularly given the really stark facts that we know regarding life expectancy of people living with mental illness being vastly reduced than those who live without mental illness. So probably just doing, like I said, what other trusts are doing. We've had a lot of engagement with our GPs, again, trying to promote the physical health care of people in contact with our service users. And we've got some more enhanced local schemes where we've got our staff in GP surgeries, so supporting people to attend those GP surgeries. I think some of the challenges have been around sharing information, particularly around blood test results. You know, all of the things you take for granted that are in the primary healthcare record, making sure that they've, they're open and they've got access right across to all of the healthcare professionals involved in somebody's care is probably has been a real challenge for us. And again, we're still grappling with some of those challenges locally, but made some really good progress and getting some good results, particularly through the national audit that we've been participating in.
And we know from, you know, the original national audit that happened in 2010 and the second one in 2012, that physical health checks, physical health monitoring was, you know, really quite poor at that point. Only a third of people, I think, in the original health check with schizophrenia had their physical health monitored regularly. And we've seen some improvements on that front, to be fair, over the last few years. But I guess I'm interested in kind of how you evaluate the quality of those physical health checks as well, because it's one thing to say that people are having a physical health check, but then having one that actually has an impact and picks up problems and is well conducted. You say you're doing staff training on that front. How are you making sure that they are well delivered, those checks?
I think, as you say, it's not easy. And in some respects, whilst we've been, I think, as a mental health sector, been working hard at this for a few years now, I think when you've got systems in place that fundamentally aren't joined up, and when you look at somebody's mental health separate from their physical health care, actually identifying people who need a physical health check is the first part of it. So I think SMI registers in primary care were incredibly helpful for that. But it's, as you say, it's like everything. You can identify a need, you can then do an assessment, but most fundamentally, it's what happens with that information. And I think at the heart of that, that has to be around the engagement and the co-production. So supporting people to make different lifestyle choices in some instances, or at the very basic, giving them access to, you know, the healthcare that every other member of the population can have access to and engage with. So I think monitoring the kind of quality and the outcomes is challenging. And if anything, I think we're only really at the start of the opportunity to really improve people's health. And when you look at the, one of the things that troubles me greatly, and one of the reasons why I'm so pleased to sign our organisation up to Equally Well, is the system's been trying to do a lot of these things for some time now, yet we're not seeing the gap in life expectancy closed, and in some instances we're seeing it widen. So I think you've actually hit the nail on the head there, really, which is we can make changes to the system, but actually how do we really demonstrate we're improving outcomes? How do we really demonstrate we're closing that gap with life expectancy? And I think we are really just scratching the surface on that. And I suppose the thing that I find most excited about Equally Well is it's not simply about NHS organisations and professionals changing the way they do things. And I think perhaps we focused a lot of our effort to date on trying to change the way we do things. It's about a genuine co-production and a collaboration, because, you know, I think it's like everything. You can have the best systems in place, you can put the training in place, but actually if both people involved in the delivery and the receipt of care and people's own recovery aren't engaged in designing how that works, then we're unlikely to be successful. So I think there's a lot more to do, Andre, and I think that's one of the things that I'm sort of particularly excited about, really, which is the opportunity that Equally Well brings to that co-production.
Yeah, it's a real kind of coordinated national effort, isn't it? I agree, that's a real strength. The fact that, you know, the key ethos here is this is everyone's business. It's not just about mental health services, it's primary care, it's hospital care, it's community care, local authorities, charities, research bodies. You know, it's a really interesting mix of organisations and co-production at the core, and the lived experience group that we think are running at the core of that. You're the mental health lead in your STP, so you must be quite sort of clued up about this kind of collaboration. What are the kind of the barriers and levers to this kind of thing working, do you think?
I mean, I think first and foremost, and some people might be surprised to hear this, but I do think the Sustainability and Transformation Partnerships provide a great opportunity. So we are a member of one of the largest ones in the country, which at times can be slightly unwieldy and challenging, and there are 24 NHS organisations involved in that partnership. Although we know Equally Well, in fact, the whole delivery of mental health care isn't just about statutory sector, you know, the third sector, charities play a huge, huge role in that, as does education and universities. So what it's given us the opportunity to do, and what we have done, is we've developed a strategic plan. We've got three priorities: promotion and prevention, delivering more integrated, joined up care, and more effective partnerships. So again, Equally Well absolutely fits really as part of our plans and our STP, and we've co-produced these with our communities, people who use services, as well as not just the statutory organisations, the third sector have been involved as well. I think that presents gives us a really big opportunity, because again it gives us a platform to have these conversations. I think some of the barriers in the systems are created by the system itself. So I think again, where care is fragmented, where sometimes the responsibility for mental health care and then the whole physical health care is seen as the sole responsibility of the mental health sector. And in fact, we know GPs themselves are under pressure. So actually trying to develop ways in which people's physical health care, whether you've got a mental illness or not, are treated in exactly the same way with specialist support when it's needed can prove really challenging. So as a mental health trust, where we're delivering care to thousands of people, and people on caseloads of community mental health teams, there is not just a reluctance, there's a real concern from primary care about what it means then to be delivering the physical health care for people who use services. You know, that's a real barrier that I'm sure perhaps exists in some other parts of the country, that we've got to work with primary care to find a way to overcome that. You know, there should be no reason why somebody with mental health needs isn't getting their physical health care and primary care alongside everybody else. And that's where the specialist skills exist for that. That can be a barrier. I think also culturally sometimes in mental health, we can create some of the barriers ourselves in the system whereby we talk about joined up care, yet we still find it challenging to really describe and put into practice a package of care in the community that does bring together both the physical and the mental health. So I think it's a really good opportunity to get partners around the table, to get everybody signed up to the importance of this. And I think some of the real levers for that are demonstrating where there are not just really poor health outcomes, such as the gap in life expectancy, but inefficiencies whereby other parts of the system are being used because we haven't focused enough on prevention and promotion. And on our patch, we know that 20% of all attendances at A&E are primarily for people presenting for their mental health. And again, that's a really good lever for getting the system to think differently about how it organises care around individuals and the population.